are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Did you feel that rumble?
Did you hear that sound? KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Atomic Bamboozle, the false promise of a nuclear renaissance, on Sunday, March 12th from 2:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Atomic Bamboozle is a documentary film that challenges the proposed climate change solution of returning to nuclear power. The film will be followed by a Q&A with experts and advocates in the film. Again, that's Atomic Bamboozle, the false promise of a nuclear renaissance, on Sunday, March 12th, from 2:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is serving up a series of scintillating sounds to help get you through the home stretch of winter. It's the thrilling Volume 2 of KBOO's annual programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills. Tune in for music marathons, public affairs series, special programming days, and more. Find all the great shows listed at kboo.fm/thrills. And please support awesome programming like this by making a donation to KBOO right now. Text KBOO to the number 44321 or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and help us reach our $17,000 goal. Thank you.
Tune in to KBOO every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. for Squirrel Snow, the show where we broadcast galactic awareness, animal awareness, where we have fascinating conversations with movers and shakers in the fields of galactic awareness and animal awareness, and we play music that can raise our frequency of consciousness. Yeah, that is Squirrel Snow every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Rise them up, KBOO 90.7. You done what's your girl, Tasha T.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. Mm-hmm. He calls me Q War most of the time.
Indeed.
You guys are tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Welcome back, y'all. Stick around. A lot in store for you today. A lot to talk about. A lot of things been up in the news. Not the least of which is Dilbert, or rather the comic strip creator for the Dilbert comics, and some of his comments that have resulted in him being dropped by newspapers across the country. We're going to get into that and break that down and figure out the whys and potential sources, and of course do our best to educate you how to interact with folks who might feel as frustrated as he does and feel like, you know, that is whatever. We'll tell you the whole story. Stick around for that. Also, we have to talk about CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference that took place recently, and these new candidates who will be running for the GOP nomination. This is a space that we function in as well, and so it's our job to kind of brief you on what things may come. Some are familiar and some maybe you don't know too much about. So all that, and of course we're going to be doing our Way Black History Fact. This time we're going to be talking about something I didn't know about. I came across this piece of information and I'm happy to share our Way Black History Fact. A bomb that was set off deliberately in Philadelphia that killed 11 black folks, five of whom were children. So there's a whole story there, and that and so much more for you to stick around for. But first and foremost, like we always do at this time, let's check out some Ebony Excellence. How does that sound to you, Q?
Shall we?
Shall. So this week's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media, And we are going to be shouting out a lady, another lady I didn't know too much about, named Charlene Vivian Stringer. What's she known by?
Professionally known as C. Vivian Stringer.
That's it. Okay. She's an athlete, and Q kind of knows about athlete stuff. Anyway, she's an American former basketball coach, and she holds one of the best coaching records in the history of women's basketball. She was a head coach of the Rutgers University women's basketball team from 95 until her retirement in 2022. Stringer is the first coach in NCAA history to lead three different women's programs to the NCAA Final Four. Rutgers, how do I say that?
Rutgers,
that's it. In 2000 and in 2007, the University of Iowa in 1993, and Cheney State College, which is now Cheney University of Pennsylvania, in 1982. She is the fifth winningest coach in women's basketball history, and she was honored as the Naismith College Coach of the Year for women's basketball in 93. And she's a member of the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. She was elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame in April 2009 and was inducted in September of that year. On February 26, 2013, Stringer won her 900th game, becoming only the fourth coach in women's basketball history to reach that mark. And she's about to have her 75th birthday, and she is decidedly Ebony Excellence. And from what I understand, and how she came to our attention here, is that she took a group of women from an HBCU to the championship very early in her career when she wasn't even a coach. She just kind of volunteered for that program. So a lot of success stories in her lifetime, and we're happy to celebrate her. So, yeah. Now, before we get into this, serious question. Did you ever really read the Dilbert comics?
I've never read the Dilbert comics, but they are so excessively popular that I've seen them.
Sure. You're familiar with them.
I want to say millions of times, but that sounds like too many.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
I'm being hyperbolic on purpose, though. I've seen them in an infinite amount of times. Part of,
yeah, okay.
Yes.
I recognize that some of our listeners might not have grown up in a world where newspapers were popular. So Dilbert is a newspaper comic. It's basically like a one-frame cartoon or four-frame cartoon or whatever, where you look at this image and then the next one next to it and so forth all the way through, and it tells you a story. And Dilbert was about a guy who worked in an office space and often had issues with office politics or office life or whatever. And it was a comic, so it was meant to be funny or, you know, bring up some attention about or something like that. It wasn't a political cartoon per se. It was just making light of
kind of satirical though.
Right. So this is how we came to know Dilbert as a part of, you know, popular culture. But I would never go as far as to say that Dilbert spoke to my reality. You know, by the time I got old enough to start trying to read newspapers every day for content, you know, phones were out and you could just look at a phone. And so I didn't really come across Dilbert for the sake of enjoying it. I just was generally familiar with it. But the illustrator and the creator of this comic had some interesting things to say recently. We're going to get into that in just a moment. And what he said, there are some people out there that defended it, because taken at face value, you might not know exactly what he was trying to say or what he was trying to get at. And the world is full of ignoramuses and people who insist on being the victim and who insist on seeing other people who demand equality as playing the victim, right? And we have a classic example of that here. And that's why we wanted to talk about this today, because we know that this might be making the rounds in your world, or maybe it already has. And without context, a person might look at what he's saying and say, well, I could see that, or well, maybe there's a point. And we're here to educate you and to paint the picture, right?
They got to be doing some stretching.
Sure. We know that.
Mental gymnastics.
You and I both know that. But, you know, people who don't live this life and, you know, read what we read, know what we know, have the experience we have, it might not be as far of a stretch for them. Because, again, accepting certain things at face value that's all you know. There's no context. There's no nuance. There's nothing else to it. And so we're happy to share with you. So let me read a bit. This comes from NPR.org. I like saying the names of our sources so you know kind of where we're picking from. And if you need a different type of balance, be our guest. But we're letting you know our starting point. So I'll read. The fallout was sparked by a YouTube live stream posted February 22nd, where Adams, who is the guy who creates the Dilbert comic, referenced a Rasmussen poll that found only a slim majority of Black Americans agreed with the statement, "It's okay to be white." Adams went on to accuse Black Americans of being, quote, a hate group, and advised white people to, quote, get away from them. Okay. But cartoonists say Adams has a long history of spewing problematic views. In the past, Adams has inaccurately described people who are not vaccinated against COVID as the real winners of the pandemic. He also questioned the accuracy of the Holocaust death toll. Another of Adams' claims is that he had lost multiple job opportunities for being white. All right, so let's stop here for a quick tick. Okay. Now, his other idea, political ideas about the vaccine, about, you know, the way the world is working or whatever, kind of paints a picture of maybe who he is. Probably seems like a solitary dude. Maybe gets his information from one source, maybe two. The lesser right leaning of the two would probably be Fox News. And has insisted, has determined rather, that the world is against him or his kind in particular. You know, there's a lot of folks out there who, straight white Christian men, are like, yo, we're under attack, right? And they feel that way. And whether or not we believe it's founded, we have to acknowledge that that is true. And on this show, we've always done this, that we acknowledge that that is true. You feel that way. And we acknowledge that you are our brothers. No matter what, you are our brothers, right?
And now, I'm acknowledging that you're tripping.
Of course, you're tripping. That goes without saying. But, you know, we can't dismiss people. We wouldn't want that happening to us. We can't do that to anyone else. And we have to acknowledge, okay, this is your reality and approach it accordingly, right? So let me go through this again, at least the first part. Again, for folks that don't know any better, that take it at face value, him saying that this Rasmussen poll found only a slim majority, again, majority, most Black people, according to the Rasmussen poll, feel, or rather agree with the statement, it's okay to be white. Then he looks at, well, the rest of the Black people, almost half, disagree with that. This is his determination based on that one little bit of information. And then he goes on to say the Black people are a hate group, white people need to get away from them, okay? So if those are the facts, you can say, well, shoot, if he feels that way and that poll is accurate and blah, 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 then he's off the deep end, but I see how he could reach that conclusion. Whether or not you agree with it is not in question. You could see how a person could go from reading this one poll to that conclusion. At least I could see him going crazy based off of that. The thing is, I know better. So I'm going to help you to know better as well. I'll start. First off, Rasmussen poll, very, very right-leaning poll. Very right-leaning. They're known for that, right? A slim majority is still a majority. But remember, there's when people do polling, there's, you know, do you agree with this statement? Do you disagree with this statement? And often enough, there is don't know enough about the statement to respond or have no response or, you know, offer no, you know, whatever. So in his determination that nearly half Black people disagree with this, it doesn't account for the people who refuse to respond, you know, et cetera. Another thing that we don't.
Nearly half of the Black people that were polled and responded, that could be 17 people.
There you go.
I'm not saying that's so, but just again,
yeah. And where were those people from?
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Are they from the South where they've had really rough time with, you know, racial relations and so forth. But here's the thing that is, I think, the most important thing for everyone to know about. When you ask the statement, it's okay, when you ask people if it's okay to be white, that's very similar to asking, like, okay, do you agree with the statement? Let me ask you a question, Q. Do you agree with the statement, Black Power? It's an honest question. You can say no if you don't, but do you agree with the statement, Black Power? If someone said Black Power, would you be like, yeah, man, that's fine?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Now, if somebody came and said White Power, how would that make you feel? Is it a different
single word answer? Because that statement is very, very problematic.
That's all I needed. That's all I needed. That was a perfect answer. Okay, so watch this. The reason why Black Power is different from White Power is because White Power is rooted in the oppression of Black people, the statement. And Black Power is meant to galvanize and energize and fortify a movement and idea of Black people pursuing equality, pursuing fairness, pursuing, you know, representation, etc. Right? So the spirit behind the statement is very different, even though you just change Black to white in the Black Power and White Power. I want to take it a step further, if I may. I am a part of a group. I've said this on the show before. I'm a part of a group on Reddit. And this group is the opposition. You know, we do a show here where we do our best to have conversations, Black conversations. And oftentimes we share this stage with our AAPI brothers and sisters, our Hispanic brothers and sisters, our Native brothers and sisters, our LGBTQIA plus brothers and sisters. We've even had officers chime in on the show here. And we find
their spouses.
We find, exactly. I remember that. Yeah. And we find that those systems that the officers subscribe to are very problematic. Right. But we do recognize that brotherhood is central, and fellowship and love is central to our mission here on this show. Right. However, I need to know what people who don't subscribe to that philosophy are saying and doing and how they feel. So rather than just subscribe to a bunch of like pro-Hispanic, pro-Black, you know, LGBTQIA positive, neck shark for my AAPI brothers and sisters, you know, all those things where I get my information. I also subscribe to people who would be very much opposed to even the fellowship that we try to create, the environment that we try to create on the show. And one such subscription that I have is through Reddit, and it's called It's Okay to Be White. I've been a member as long as I've been on this show. When did we make this show? In September of 2020, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ever since then, I've been in that group, in that subreddit, just a fly on the wall, just reading all these things that these very, very conservative, often, you know, very masculine energy behind a lot of the posts, what they feel, why they feel like the world is crumbling around them, why they feel they're under attack, being replaced, why Black people are all criminals and ugly and whatever it is that they think that's worth posting that day. It's all there. And in my estimation, it is a bona fide racist group. It is a group where racist people can go and celebrate and share their racist ideas with each other and have a sense of community, right? And because they're doing it out in front of people, and because they don't use the N-word, because it's moderated, you know, or I don't know that Reddit allows that language or whatever, but because they don't do that, they can tell themselves that they're not racist. They're just dealing with the real, right? But it in effect is that. It is very, very extremely mean-spirited. It is not rooted in fellowship and growth and togetherness and building. In fact, it's rooted in the opposite. Now, you can't tell me otherwise because I've been a member for years, okay? Now, The name of that group, once again, It's Okay to Be White. Now, we talked about the spirit of a statement. Okay? White power versus black power. I got another one for you, Q. You're going to love this one. Our listeners are going to love this one, especially the ones that know. Black Lives Matter. What does that mean?
It is an affirmation of a oppressed, marginalized group's right to simply exist. Important to point out, not even to pursue happiness, not even to thrive, not even to live a full life, just to exist. Because the world around them is constantly trying to drive home the idea that those lives are without worth and that they're meaningless and that their pain and their loss of life means nothing to the greater community around them.
Masterful. Masterful. Now you know what's coming next, right? White Lives Matter.
Okay, so remember the last question he asked?
Mm-hmm.
And the last statement that he said? No, they don't. No, they don't. All that stuff you just said, no. And then that's all. That's the only reason that phrase even exists. You know, the last phrase you asked about and the answer you gave, no.
That's the only reason that
no.
White Lives Matter
no,
exists.
No, period. Like, yeah. All that stuff you just said, no.
Mm-hmm. So the point here is that oftentimes these statements are rooted in the oppression, the subjugation, the silencing, the disenfranchisement of marginalized people, in this case, black people. So if you were to poll black people similarly and say, is white power a concept you can get behind? You might get similar results to this Rasmussen poll. You know, if you polled black people and asked them, do white lives matter? In principle, the language, absolutely. Is it okay to be white? The language, absolutely. But the spirit behind the statement is something very different. Of course it's okay to be white. Of course white lives matter. I like, it's the weirdest thing that sometimes we have to say that to remind people, like, yeah, we love human beings. You know, we just don't like the spirit behind these things, these statements that rise up in opposition to the group that really needs the affirmation. It's not even thinly veiled racism. It is out loud in front, in the middle of the street racism. And, you know, far be it for me to call something that when it's not, but that's what it is.
But when it is,
there it is.
Call it that.
What else am I supposed to say? There has never been a need to even ask a question, is it okay to be white, to black people? As though black people have some control over that. The nature of the question is silly. But what they do is they divorce the spirit of the statement from the language. Right.
They divorce the spirit of that intention.
And that's what happened with this guy that does the Dilbert thing. Because the media that has fed that to him, in this case, Rasmussen, has not provided proper context.
Intentionally.
There you go. And because of their right-leaning nature, they're sowing additional division. It may as well say, like I said, it may as well say, do you agree with the statement, white power? Because most folks are going to be like, no. Do we want white people to be empowered as human beings? Sure, we want all human beings to be empowered. But that statement, that particular phrase, doesn't mean what you're trying to pass it off as, Rasmussen.
And you know that.
And then,
a mistake.
And then this guy is particularly susceptible to it because the world around him has told him that he's losing as a result of very natural changes, human changes, evolution of, you know, population, culture, etc. You know, I looked up the definition of conservative and some of the synonyms. One of them said stick in the mud. And I was like,
wow.
I was like, whoa. And that's not me. You look it up yourself. Stick in the mud. Like I don't want anything to change. Well, the only constant is change, sir. Allow me to continue reading. After receiving widespread pushback for his offensive rant, Adams described himself as getting canceled. The cartoonist argued that he is simply being held accountable for his remarks. Quote, by Adams saying he's been canceled, it's him not owning up to his responsibility for the things he has said and the effect they have on other people, said Ward Sutton, who has contributed illustrations to the New York Times, the New Yorker, and Rolling Stone. He goes on, he's trying to turn himself into a victim when he himself has been a perpetrator of hate, Sutton added. He said newspapers are not obligated to run Dilbert, and they have the editorial right to cut ties with Adams if they no longer want him as a voice in their paper. All right, now this next little piece comes from Yahoo. Quote, it's almost entirely white people that canceled me. It might be entirely because they're the ones that own the publishing companies and the newspapers. He told News Nation's Chris Cuomo in an interview. He goes on to say, Black America is actually completely fine, both conservative and liberal, if they see the context, he added, citing people who contacted him about the fiasco. In the wake of his controversial video, Adams has stood by what he said and even received support from people who are frustrated by what they call cancel culture, including billionaire Elon Musk.
Of course.
Ooh. So.
The guy who increased the use of the N-word by like 5,000%. Of course, you got support from him.
You see what I'm saying? So you're starting to see these people who are very powerful, these people with voices, these people who are influential. They have platforms and they really feel this way. And you, our listener, need to know the context in case you don't have it, because we feel like you might end up in places where you can actually start to have important conversations and start to shift the narrative at the dinner tables with your family around Thanksgiving dinner and you know, on road trips with your friends from college that maybe they grew up a little different, you know? So understanding nuance, context, you know, and the opposite side of a conversation, I think fills in some really meaningful gaps. We're going to come back after a quick tick, but we're going to talk more about Elon Musk and, of course, the rest of these folks.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward, and you are now either tuned in or tuned back in to Civic Cypher.
Indeed, you are. Stick around. We got a lot more show in store for you. We're going to be talking about CPAC. Man, I never thought I'd have to talk about that. It sounds like a lot, but it is the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's a thing that you need to know about. It's a thing we need to talk about. And so stay tuned, because far be it from us to leave you uninformed. We're also going to spend a little bit of time talking about our Way Black History Fact. Came across a strange story I never learned about growing up. Funny how that works. And it was a bombing. Police bombing in New York City, where they bombed a neighborhood and killed a bunch of people and a bunch of little kids. And of course, you didn't know about it, but we have a microphone and an audience. So we're going to tell you all about that. Again, for our Way Black History Fact. First and foremost, though, it's time for us to discuss becoming a better ally, Baba. So today's Baba, sponsored by Major Threads, for the finest in men's sportswear. Check majorthreads.com. All right. For today's Baba, we're going to shout out John Stewart. If you haven't seen his interview circulating on the internet, he did an amazing job.
Incredible
job. Addressing some conservative hypocrisies. And we feel like that is in alignment with much of what it is we're trying to do on this show. So he didn't directly talk about Black issues per se, but pointing out the hypocrisy
to them.
Exactly.
Most of that hypocrisy is just aimed at decent people.
Right, right. And then also his whole career, he's been very much an ally. So I'll read a bit. John Stewart was with Nathan Dom. And he's quoted as saying, "You're telling me when it comes to children that have died, you don't give a flying F word to stop that, because that shall not be infringed," Stewart said. All right. When Oklahoma State Senator Nathan Dom tried to argue to John Stewart that loose gun laws make citizens safer, the TV host wasn't hearing it. He says, quote, "I'm a strong proponent of the Second Amendment." That's what the lawmaker said on Thursday's episode of The Problem with John Stewart. He goes on to say, "I believe the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed," he added, emphasizing that it's the one amendment that uses very specific affirmative language. So it's the one that uses the phrase "well-regulated." Stewart, who added that he's not opposed to the Second Amendment, replied, "I don't want to ban guns, but you're saying more guns makes us safe. So when? We got 400 million guns in the country. We had an increase in gun deaths went up," Stewart added. "So when exactly does the curve hit? What takes it down? Would a billion guns do it?" And then he goes on to talk about trans rights and a whole bunch of other things, just pointing out a lot of conservative hypocrisies. Please check that interview out. It was masterful, a masterclass in how to shut down people who know they're wrong and are for some reason committed to a bunch of dead guys that are no longer alive and their idea of what we should be doing in a modern world where guns can mow down malls full of people. Speaking of hypocrisies and hypocrites and conservative hypocrisies and that sort of thing, I got to say something before we get into this. Conservative people, in principle, are not bad people. I've learned recently.
Excuse me, yo.
I'm going somewhere with this, Q. Hear me.
Excuse me, yeah.
I'm going somewhere with this.
I'm sorry, bro. Carry on.
I've learned. We have met, both of us. You know where I'm going with this. People who are decent people. There are people who are very conservative who have allowed this show to be on the radio station that you're listening to right now. Right? So when we point out a lot of the hypocrisies that we see, we are not talking about all conservative people. There are people who have a different belief system. They want small government. They very much believe in, I'm going to do for me, you do for you, and where we end up is where we end up. There are people who believe in lots of things. You know, God, guns, and country doesn't necessarily make them bad folks. It's certainly not my philosophy, but it doesn't make them awful people, right? What we're talking about now, rather, is what we find in the political arena, not your individual belief system in your home.
Unless your individual belief system in your home shapes the way that you vote.
There you go.
And you continue to vote and support conservatives.
There you go.
That's why I laughed.
And when you ignore the realities for your fellow man and fail to heed the gravity of a vote that you cast and how that might have a negative impact on other people, and have not developed or cultivated your sense of empathy for other people to the degree that you might pause before casting a ballot for some of these folks. Yes, absolutely you. But, you know, we talk to a lot of people who, again, are conservative folks who are like, listen, man, that guy, the ex-president or whoever it is that they're talking to, Carrie Lake, you know, she's a kook, man. I believe in sensible leadership. My preference is a more conservative approach. Okay, so again, we're not talking about you. Those people, if you know them.
I mean, I guess, right? Because a lot of those people still cast those ballots.
And that's the tough part.
And then I don't care about the kook part.
That's the tough part of it. I know what you mean, because it's tough for me too.
Like,
but
I miss a time where identifying as conservative GOP Republican,
it didn't mean stripping abortion rights.
Automatically mean divisive.
Yeah.
Extreme, racist, bigoted, and I could go on a long list.
And subscribe to a detached reality that is not in any way shared meaningfully among all of humanity. you know, people that have opinions about climate change, for instance, or, you know, the morality of abortion rights or whatever. You know, and abortion is a tough one because some people have that connected with religion or personal feelings about.
Yeah, but even those people don't carry that on, right? That baby, that human being that you care so much about, you should still care once they're born.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. I'm with you, man.
Anyway. Care as much once they're born.
Anyway.
Argue as loudly once they're born. Be as like Christ once they're born. Otherwise, miss me with the entire stance. Miss me with the performative evangelism. Miss me with the performative outrage.
That's where we're going. That's where we're going. Because we see that more often in the political arena these days than we've ever seen it before. And so, again, in today's episodes, we're not talking about the everyman. Rather, we're talking about the elected official, right?
And those that vote for them. I am not letting you off the hook today. I'm sorry. I can't. I'm a father.
Look, go ahead, Q. Hold me accountable. But you know what I'm trying to say. So, CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, is a conference of conservative people where they get together and have like a conservative party about who they want to put forth, who they want to support in terms of who's going to shape the country and different parts of the country and, you know, what policies we can agree on, what sort of plans or, you know, programs we want to put forth, this sort of thing. I've heard of CPAC, but I never had to pay attention to it until, you know, now, if I'm being honest. And the main takeaway from this most recent one was that Donald Trump was there. Ron DeSantis wasn't there. And that when Nikki Haley, who's a person who's also running for president for the potential Republican nomination, was there, but she kind of was jeered out of the building. And she was speaking to a house that was not nearly as packed as they would have hoped. Even Donald Trump had 20% of his seats empty. So, again, we're just telling you about this so that you're aware of who these people are and what sort of ideas they have about this country. And bear in mind that they're going to run against potentially Joe Biden, which is an interesting reality. This is an interesting timeline that we're living in, because, you know, where's Obama? Somebody need to call Obama back because we're not done.
Can you text him?
Wish I could. Anyway, all right, so we'll start. The main guy there, of course, was Donald Trump. So he's quoted as saying, this comes from Yahoo, by the way. He's quoted as saying, in 2016, I declared, I am your voice. Trump said to the ballroom, packed, use that term loosely, with his most fervent loyalist at the Conservative Political Action Conference to some of the loudest sustained applause of the night. He goes on to say, today I add, I am your warrior, I am your justice, and for those who have been wronged and betrayed, I am your retribution. I will totally obliterate the deep state. Now, when they said it was a packed ballroom, there's another note here that says 20% of the seats were empty. And of course, Donald Trump was like kind of the highlight of the night, right? He's Republican favorite, I suppose, for president. They did a straw poll, I want to say, there, and it showed that he had 62% support for the nomination for Republican for president in 2024. So that could change, but we all know we've lived in that timeline with Donald Trump in it, so we know what to expect there. A delusional old man who is angry at everybody and makes up stuff on the fly, has no real political solutions or anything that affects people who live real lives.
Oh, no.
And yet
he has a lot that affects people that positively, live their lives.
Positively.
Just in a very, very harmful way.
Yeah. And then there's this guise and this kind of thin veneer of, oh, he got some people out of jail, or he, you know, whatever performative stuff that he had to do. But those of us that know, we know. All right. So we won't spend too much time talking about him. God knows we spent enough. Let's talk about this newcomer. All right. So this comes rather from Time magazine, not from Yahoo. All right. So a former UN ambassador under Trump, Nikki Haley, age 51, got a warm welcome from the CPAC crowd as she began her remarks. She focused her speech mostly on criticizing President Joe Biden and socialist Democrats. She did indirectly jab the former president by pointing out that Republicans have lost the popular vote in 7 of the last 8 presidential elections, and by calling for a mental competency test for all politicians over 75 years old, which would apply to Trump, 76, as well as the threat posed by China, and drew no direct contrasts with Trump. Okay, so I want to go back through that. So Nikki Haley, this potential candidate for president, said that Republicans lost the popular vote in 7 of the last 8 presidential elections. So there's that. That is a prominent Republican figure acknowledging that Republicans have to play this game in order to hold power. They have to play this, you know, what is that thing called? The Electoral College game. Which doesn't necessarily mean this is what the people want. It simply means this is how you can beat the system. This is how you can win the system, not the people. There's no way reflects what the majority of the folks want. She's acknowledging that.
And this is how you can beat that system every time, because it's not going to change. Even with all of its faults and all of its holes being clear to the eye of most discerning, responsible adults, it is still going to remain the same, that a place this small has the same voice as a place this big. Forgive me if I got further away from the mic. No, you guys can't see me, but
I got you.
Even in listening to me describe that, you should be able to paint a picture in your head, because you know it doesn't make any sense either.
And that's really important too, to point out, because the fact is, that acknowledgement says a mouthful. Okay. Now, we happen to know that most of the people, and most of the people who are registered to vote, are more liberal leaning voters. However, the people who vote most frequently and are way more involved politically tend to be more conservative. And this is how,
unfortunately,
this is how the country is
shaped, is the right word,
shaped, you know, by conservatives and liberals, when the truth is we should be a much more liberal leaning country. That they've taught us to fear the word.
It's not even that we should be, we are.
Yeah, in fact, we are. Based on a human level, we are. But based on our policies and our laws, based, our gun laws,
based
and all
on
sorts
the numbers,
of
numbers, we are. Based right. on how we participate in the political process,
it's a toss up, right?
And it's not you guys' fault, right? People who identify in that group that is losing this fight, it's not you guys' fault, right? The system does not provide you with choices, options, and or candidates that you can be excited about. Far too often. However, we also self-cannibalize, judge, and micromanage ourselves in a way that causes us to kind of scrutinize on a level that's too high, when you know the other side isn't doing that. Like, at some point, you got to play this game by their rules, yeah, or keep losing it.
Yeah. And so she has to know that based on that, there's a very good chance that she might be elected to the highest office in the land and not represent most of the people. And that's got to be a strange position to be in. Now, if you're them and you're holding on to power, you know, you might be ready for that, you know, but I think that that says a mouthful. I want to move on. All right. She said she lost the popular vote and she wants a mental competency test for politicians 75 years old. And I think that there's something there, too. I like the idea of village elders, you know, that like, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in those years. But there's also a tendency to be a stick in the mud. There's also the very likelihood that, you know, the decisions you make now, you're not going to have to deal with them. So if you choose to ignore your impact on the climate, on the planet, you're not going to be around to see what that looks like. And us and our children will be. And so there is something there about having people be examined to see how competent they are. And I feel like there's something to that. Now, whether or not that's discriminatory, who knows? But it would at least keep us a little bit more progressive in terms of our ideas. But I don't think I would just like get behind an idea like that and champion it. That's worth listening to, I suppose. And then, of course, like I said, she some thinly veiled jabs at Trump and then talked about the threat of China. These are all things that are kind of beyond the scope of what it is that we talk about here, but
not to kind of breeze by.
Go ahead.
Shout at her for having the courage, even if they're thinly veiled shots at Trump, to take shots at Trump.
Yeah.
Right? She at least has enough courage to stand for some actual beliefs, even if I don't agree with those beliefs, to call this dude out as not being
That's what I was trying
to say. That's brave, because alienating yourself and putting yourself as opposed to him has been political suicide.
Yeah. Well, let's get there.
For those in his party, rather.
All right. So let's wrap this up. Haley, the first major candidate to officially challenge Donald Trump for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, was berated by hecklers Friday as she exited the Conservative Political Action Conference outside of Washington. And I think they were shouting something like, "We want Trump," or something like that as she was leaving. So very disrespectful. It was Trump's crowd. So what are you going to do, right? Now, the elephant in the room, Ron DeSantis. And this is where we need to really have a bit of a conversation. Now, you might know about Ron DeSantis if you're listening to this show this far in. I have no doubt that you know who he is. He's another Republican favorite. For everybody who's turned off by Donald Trump, they're turned on by this guy. He's not as old. I think he's like in his mid-40s. He's extremely conservative, and he's getting stuff done.
Can we replace that word?
What?
Because that's not what you actually mean. You said he's extremely conservative, which means he's extremely into the way that conservative GOP Republican candidates and political people think, speak, and act. That word doesn't actually mean that, though.
Okay.
The word conservative doesn't mean extreme, racist, bigot.
Oh, yeah. Go fire away, dog. Let him.
I don't know a better word to use.
Yeah, it's going to say it.
When you say he's extremely conservative, as you said it, I'm like, but that's not what he means. I don't know the better word to use.
Listen, man, you can be, I'll be, remember Key and Peele when they did the Obama and anger translator? You can be that, all right?
No, I didn't, but I didn't even mean as a form of translation, just as a, you guys can't see us. I listen to our show just like you. Except I get to listen to it while we're making it. And I'm an audience for Ramses when he speaks. So when he said he's extremely conservative, my mind made me change the way I was sitting. Like, because I know what extremely conservative means, and I know that's not what Ramses means.
Yeah.
He means he's extremely politically right, extremely.
Mm-hmm.
GOP, Trump era, MAGA, conservative, far Republican, right. Far right political person.
Yeah.
Not the word conservative.
Yeah.
My grandmother was extremely conservative.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The way she brought us up, the way we attended church, our actual core beliefs of our family, the way she spent money, the way she saved and invested in all those things. She was extremely conservative. Ramses means something completely, I don't know if different is the word, but not what the word conservative means on its face.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate you pointing that out. So anyway, this guy, Ron DeSantis, so far, he's denounced a full-on attack on woke ideology. For some reason, words like socialism and being woke have been co-opted and turned into a bad thing. I love socialist programs.
So does Ron DeSantis.
Thank you.
So do all of the hyper-rich, hyper-powerful people in this country.
When it benefits them.
Because they use socialist principles to benefit each other all the time. What they mean is that we don't want to collectively help poor people.
Yeah.
That's what they mean when they try to denounce socialism. When it's rich people helping other rich and powerful people stay rich and powerful, socialism they love is all good. Socialism. Yeah.
But he also talks about like woke ideology, which is I'm woke AF. I'll stay that way. I guess this guy must be asleep. Go ahead, dog. But there's a video I saw. He was telling a cheering crowd that in Florida, Florida is where woke goes to die, right? And woke, you know what woke is. You know, progressive, trying to create and cultivate a better world for all of us where it's inclusive and everybody gets a seat at the table. And he's staunchly opposed to that. So like I said, dude is probably asleep. I don't know. And then, of course, on this show, when we brought his name up in the past, it was because of his attacks on teaching what he calls critical race theory, what is in fact and in practice accurate and full American history to kids, so that we understand who we are, why we ended up where we are, and what we can do about it. And he, according to that same poll that put Trump at 60%, had about 20% of the support at CPAC. And so that could change. These are the names to bear in mind. And of course, we had to talk about it. So bear that in mind, all right? Now it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. You can find that out at iHeart.com or BINnews.com. And I will be reading from the New York Times. Now, again, this made its way to me recently. I had no idea. And so we're going to learn this together. All right. 35 years after MOVE bombing that killed 11, Philadelphia apologizes. All right. A police helicopter dropped an explosive charge onto the roof of a row house during an armed standoff in 1985. The resultant fire destroyed 61 homes in a West Philadelphia neighborhood. The Philadelphia City Council this week formally apologized for the decision in 1985 to drop an improvised bomb on a row house occupied by the MOVE separatist group, a desperate action that resulted in a fire that killed 11 and destroyed 61 homes. I remember five of them were children, if I'm not mistaken. The resolution marked the first time that the city had formally apologized for the action, a measure which also calls for an annual day of remembrance on May 13th, the anniversary of the bombing, was sponsored by Jamie Gauthier, a city councilwoman who grew up near the West Philadelphia neighborhood where the bombing happened. Ms. Gauthier recalled watching the aftermath of the bombing on television as a child and said that the neighborhood was only now starting to fully recover from the devastation. Quote, "There have been divisions in our city between police and community for decades, and I think if we had done the true work of acknowledging what happened with MOVE and other acts of police violence, and we had really worked on not only the acknowledgement, but the building better relationships and working toward reconciliation, we wouldn't find ourselves in the place we are now," she said in an interview. She goes on to say, "It was always striking to me that we did this, that our city did this, and no one was ever held accountable." She added, "I thought that was unconscionable." Ms. Gauthier began circulating a draft resolution before the May 13th anniversary of the MOVE attack, but the effort stalled and then was delayed because of coronavirus restrictions. The May 25th killing of George Floyd gave renewed energy to the resolution, she said, and the need to recognize the effects of police killings of Black people have had on the community grew even more with the October 26th killing of Walter Wallace Jr., who was fatally shot by the police during the encounter in the same neighborhood where the Move Home once stood. In a statement, Mayor Jim Kenney of Philadelphia acknowledged the resolution's importance. Quote, in an effort to learn from our past and do better by our residents in the future, this annual day of observation is a positive step in the healing process of our city desperately needs, he said. Goes on to say, this year we saw the pain and trauma caused by the Move bombing is still alive in West Philadelphia. So I commend council for taking the step toward healing. The mayor acknowledged missteps in the city's attempts to rebuild the neighborhood in the years immediately following the attack, but said in a recent public-private partnership, which had succeeded in reconstructing homes in the affected area. All right. Move, a group described by members as a, quote, back to nature movement, unquote, that would return the United States to Native Americans and do away with all government, was deemed an authoritarian, violence-threatening cult by city officials, who said the group used threats, abuse, and intimidation to terrify their neighbors and to bring about confrontation. At the time of the attack, the police were acting to clear up the group out of a row house at 6221 Osage Avenue in response to neighbors' complaints of filthy conditions in the house and night-long amplified lectures from Move members. At 6 a.m. on May 13th, 1865, the Philadelphia police came under gunfire from people inside the home, which led to a day-long standoff. Throughout the day, the Philadelphia Special Investigation Commission later found the police fired more than 10,000 rounds of ammunition in less than 90 minutes at the row house.
Ramses, can you read that number?
Okay, let me read that again. Sure. Throughout the day, the Philadelphia Special Investigation Commission later found police fired more than 10,000 rounds of ammunition in less than 90 minutes at the row house, which was occupied by men, women, and children. Calling the police officers' actions clearly excessive and unreasonable, the commission's report acknowledged that police were unable to fully suppress the gunfire coming from the home and that efforts to negotiate with the people inside had been haphazard and fruitless. Police bomb squad members fashioned an improvised bomb out of plastic explosives, and an officer dropped the charge from a helicopter onto the roof of the Move Row House in an effort to destroy a fortified bunker the group had built there. At 5:27 p.m., the bomb detonated, which started a fire that police ordered firefighters to let burn. The blaze spread, ultimately destroying 60 other nearby homes. The plan to bomb the Move houses was reckless, ill-conceived, and hastily approved, the commission's report said in 1986.
I wonder why.
It goes on. Quote, dropping a bomb on an occupied row house was unconscionable and should have been rejected out of hand. The hasty, reckless, and irresponsible decision by the police commissioner and the fire commissioner to use the fire as a tactical weapon was unconscionable, the report added. The deaths of 11 people, 6 adults and 5 children, in the police action were classified as unjustified homicides. Police Commissioner George J. Samber, who directed the aerial bombing, resigned in November 1985. A grand jury in 1988 cleared Mayor W. Wilson Good and other top city officials of criminal liability for death and destruction resulting from the operation.
Shocking.
In an op-ed published by The Guardian on May 10th, Mr. Good, the former mayor called on the city to issue a formal apology for the attack. Quote, I apologize and encourage others to do the same, Mr. Good wrote. We will be a better city for it. All right. So, didn't know about that. I didn't color that in any way. That's New York Times. So if that was colored in a way to paint a picture about anyone, it's the time, so you know what they're on. Either way, for people that are speaking on loudspeakers and they're living as one would live with nature in the city of Philadelphia, which other people may not think is up to their standards or, you know, whatever they said, filthy conditions. But to me, that means that they probably were growing their own food in the yard or something. I don't know. And then, of course, their amplifiers were too loud when they were giving their speeches. That doesn't mean let's bomb them.
I mean, and you have to imagine the type of people that were okay with specifically ordering to allow these fires to burn with intent of murdering people would consider anything filthy that doesn't look,
move, or behave,
move, behave, love, or pray the way they do.
So that Black Lives Matter statement was a long time coming, because that's hard to imagine the police blowing up a bunch of kids.
Está sintonizando KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM y a través de la internet en KBOO.FM.
Want to be in the know for all things Ghost of Hollywood? Check out our website at theghostofhollywood.com for all the newest episodes.